B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. Today we head back to campus a little bit and talk with NC State head men's golf coach Press McFall and University of North Carolina head men's golf coach Andrew DiBattista, as both are taking their teams out to the Stanford Regional in hopes of being one of 30 squads to advance to the NCAA tournament in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Also, we'll pick the brain of Ron Cyrak on a myriad of topics on the PGA and LPGA tours that have arisen this week. But we begin in Raleigh with NC State's Press McFall.
Coach, before we focus on what's happened this spring with your 24th ranked Wolfpack, let's take a second and just review your fall. You go 7th, 4th, 1st, and then a 2nd at the Royal Oaks, which due to weather got a little wild, and that field is always incredible. If you were looking for progressive improvement, I bet you hated for fall break to come.
Yeah, you know, the Royal Oaks event was probably the best event we played all year, top to bottom. It was a really cool format. All five players played together to find some from each team. That created a little bit of excitement and camaraderie that the guys were getting to compete alongside each other and support and encourage each other while they were playing, and that was a lot of fun. That golf course that we played, it's Merido, they had to move it last minute because
right.
of the bad weather. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, what a great venue, and that was a real hoot, and there was definitely a sense as the fall was going on that we were getting better and better and better, and then it all sort of just came together.
Is there something that as a coach you say to yourself as you're leaving Royal Oaks and you're like, okay, how do we put all this momentum in a bottle for just a couple of months and we'll sit it on the shelf? Hell, we'll even put it in the fridge, okay? And we'll open it up and we'll all take a drink in January and this will be the same again. I mean, there has to be a part of you just going, gosh, I hate that we're having to stop right now.
You know, I guess a little bit. There's probably part of you as a competitor that just wants to keep going, especially when you've had some success. But at the same time, we knew our guys had been busting it ever since the spring, last spring, and then they went straight through all summer, and they were ready for a break. They needed a break. We knew it, and it came at a good time. And now you leave the fall with a great taste in your mouth, and you head into the off season with a sense of accomplishment. So at the end of the day, it was fine.
Coach Press McFall is the head men's golf coach, North Carolina State Wolfpack. He's our guest taking dead aim. Before we get into the spring, let's talk a little bit about your team. I'm one of these people, I don't care what sport it is, I love senior leadership, and you've been getting it in spades from Stephen Frank. And look, anytime your scoring average is 72 or under, you're doing well. When it's under 71, as his is, that's letting your sticks do a lot of talking. That's a hell of a guy you got out front.
Well, he's a superb player. I mean, he has no weakness. I mean, sometimes he has a hard time figuring out what he needs to work on because, you know, most every player has, well, if I putted it better or if I drove it better, I'd be, well, he drives it great. He carries it 300+. He's a good wedge player. He's a good iron player. He gets the ball up and down and putts it good. I mean, he's a total package. There's just no other way to put it. And that's why his scores are as low and as consistent as they are. He's a hardworking guy who invests a great deal of who he is into golf every single day. And that's why he's been steadily getting better and better and better.
Junior Benjamin.
So, yeah.
Junior Benjamin Shipp also be giving you a ton of rounds this year. His scoring average is under 72. In fact, you've got five guys, Coach, whose averages are under 74, including another senior, Harrison Rhodes, and each is giving you more than 30 rounds this year. I've been around long enough to know that's a luxury a lot of coaches would like to have, five guys with scoring averages under 74, right?
Oh, for sure, absolutely. And, you know, in that mix, that's one thing I love about these guys. in the mix, even though by any metric you could pull together, this is a pretty good team that scored pretty well. There's just a sense of dissatisfaction amongst every single one of them that they've been close, but they haven't played quite the way that they wanted to or expected to yet, and they know that they, as a team, that they haven't all put it together at the same time. Hopefully that's what happens this postseason. I love the fact that it's a good team that doesn't rest on its laurels, that it's a good team that feels like that they could be great and that they've been a little bit impatient waiting for that to happen. I like that a lot.
Coach, sometimes you have teams of guys who use their practice time and their practice rounds as just that, introverted practice. Other times you have teams with multiple alpha males out there who are looking to compete at every opportunity. Sounds to me like you may have a little bit more of the latter than the former. How would you describe your guys? Are your practice rounds and are they intense competition? Do these guys really push each other?
They do like to push each other. Golf's just it's an individual sport, and it's brought awkwardly sometimes to the team context, and it's hard sometimes. Every player has a little bit different needs. Their personalities are a little bit different. How they're going to prepare for a big event or might shape itself a little bit differently in each one. But these guys enjoy being together. They enjoy golf together. They enjoy traveling together. They have fun on the road together. And then, when they get on the golf course, there's some friendly banter and there's some friendly chat.
Head coach Press McFall, the NC State Wolfpack, is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's move on to your spring. Kids came back like they never left. You opened in Ponte Vedra with the top five and then another top five in Puerto Rico. And then a whole different golf experience for your kids heading out to Bandon Dunes. How was that trip, and what did your team think about West Coast, literally West Coast golf at one of the most spectacular settings in the world?
Well, that was awesome. I mean, I would love to make that trip a lot. That place is pretty incredible. And I think getting out of your comfort zone like that, challenging your guys like that, I think it makes them better. I think it's going to pay some dividends for us in San Francisco this week, the fact that we've been out there. I even took my clubs, and I played golf out there. I usually don't travel with the clubs, but it was abandoned, so I had to.
I was going to say, you have to do that, Coach. Come on.
Absolutely. It was awesome. And the guys loved it. We had perfect weather one day. We had wind another day. We had some hail delays on another day. I mean, it ran the gamut. We had everything. And it was a special experience for our guys. And I think they learned a lot. And we got better in the process, for sure.
Well, and you talk about a different kind of golfing experience. It's one thing to play, I think it's one thing to play on the East Coast and East Coast winds. The West Coast winds, I don't know what it is. To me, they feel more intense, and they seem to come at you from different directions. It's an entirely different feel from coastal golf on the East. Do you agree with that?
100%. Yeah, you've obviously been around, if you can make that observation, no doubt. I mean, I think that a 10-mile-an-hour wind on the West Coast plays with your golf ball more like a 15-20 on the East Coast. Wind's a little colder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a meteorologist. That's my best guess. But I don't have to be a meteorologist to know that the ball isn't traveling as far as it normally does. No doubt that it's happening out there, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and you bring up San Francisco. What was it? Mark Twain said the coldest winter I ever spent was the summer in San Francisco, so you can bet there's going to be a cold wind out there. Press McFall with NC State, head men's golf coach, our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, you finish off the spring with a top 10 and a couple of top fives. And then what I imagine was a somewhat disappointing conference tournament, or was it?
Yeah, it was disappointing. We were hoping to place better than that. The league is obviously really solid. It's a stacked league. We're 24 in the country going into the ACCs, and that's good for seventh in the league. But played pretty solid over the last two rounds. We definitely might have done better, but all in all, it was fairly solid.
I was going to ask, is there a complacency that can set in when you realize, Look, we're number 24 in the country. We're going to regionals no matter what here. Or does the whole competitive thing take over and that can't happen?
Well, I think anything's possible. And when you're talking about golf and your ability to get distracted in the moment, I think anything's possible. And I certainly think that you can get sloppy or lazy. That didn't happen for us. I'm 100% certain of that. The ACC's really means something to us, and one of our goals is to compete and win for ACC championships, and we're working towards that every day in recruiting, every day at the golf course. We talk about it a lot as a team. It's something that we want to accomplish. That was a most important to us, and I know our guys. It was obvious how seriously they were taking it, how badly they wanted to play well. To answer your question, that complacency can set in and will set in on some teams, but it didn't set in on this one. And I think the disappointment of ACCs will hopefully just serve to help us be better in the postseason.
Coach, the goal is to get to Fayetteville in the NCAAs the last week in May. But first, there's the regional. Y'all are headed out to San Francisco. Talk a little bit about where you're going and some of the other teams that are out there with you.
So we're headed to Stanford University Golf Course in Palo Alto. There's 13 teams out there. It's kind of crazy. I think there's four teams from out of that 13. I think there's four teams from west of the Mississippi. That's Stanford, the host, and Arizona State, the number one seed, and Kansas and Denver. And everybody else is from the East Coast. And it's us, it's North Carolina, Virginia, Ole Miss, Georgia Southern, UNC Greensboro. We joked that us and Chapel Hill and Greensboro ought to get together and charter an airplane. I mean, that's a long way to go to have two of your sister schools there, you know?
Serious.
It's easy when you see your regional allocation to think about your opportunities and your threats. And one thing you're going to think about when you travel across country is the difficulty that you might face with the different grasses and adjusting, you know, to West Coast winds and all that sort of stuff. But at least comparatively speaking, that disadvantage ought to be minimized a little bit by the fact that this is more of a Southeastern Invitational golf tournament it's not like we're just jumping into the frying pan with 11 schools from the West Coast. It's a lot of schools from our part of the country as well. LSU's out there.
Get you out of here on this. Head coach Press McFaul, North Carolina State Wolfpack, our guest taking Dead Aim. Couple things that people may not know. How many from the region will advance to the medal play portion of the NCAAs of all those teams that are out there?
Yeah, there's six regional sites, and the top five teams at each regional site after 54 holes advance to the finals. So 30 schools make it to the NCAA finals in Arkansas.
Then I think it's 36 holes of medal play, and then you advance, I think top 16 or so advance to match play. How do you feel about deciding the NCAA championship in match play? Some people like it, some people hate it, some people are ambivalent about it.
I'd be somewhere between love and ambivalent.
That's funny.
Yeah. It doesn't do you any good at all to dislike it. It is the way it is. I mean, part of golf is they develop a format by which we're going to identify a champion, and then your responsibility as a competitor is to accept it and get ready and get to work in it. So there's no sense in wasting any time about it. The stuff about, well, we play stroke play all year and now we're playing match play, that's stupid. You just hurt yourself by letting that get into your thinking. I think it is kind of fun. I think it would be kind of exciting. I'm looking forward to the day that we can take part in it and compete for that championship. And also, the plain fact of the matter is that we wanted to grow the exposure of our game, and we wanted the national championship televised. And and this format went a long way towards making the competition on television compelling, because you knew exactly what a putt was for. You knew exactly what this hole was for and what it meant. And when you're playing five and counting four scores, you don't always know that in stroke play. The match play format made it clear what was going on and what that putt meant. And so the fact that television is carrying it now just adds exposure, adds growth to our game. It helps our game massively. And so I'm all for it. I support it. And we're going to that format for good reasons. And I think, and I support it. I think it's a good thing.
Ah, yes. The no man's land between love and ambivalent. I love that. NC State head men's golf coach, Press McFall. And up next, so much to discuss this week away from the actual golf courses of the PGA and LPGA tours. And Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel takes Dead Aim Adam, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Cyrak is a past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism. He's written for every major golf publication there is and now runs RonCyrak.com and is a frequent contributor to the Golf Channel. Ron, I'm so glad we got to talk today, because when I come across a week like this where so many stories I have definite opinions on, I need to talk to who I consider my conscience in the game of golf to either talk me off the bridge or jump with me. I want to start with a statement that every time I read it, it bothers me. Tiger Woods was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom on Monday. It's the highest civilian honor that one can receive. The list of golfers that have this honor: Charlie Sifford, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, that's it. That's the list. When I see people asking, do you think he deserved it? Number one, you're not the president of the United States, so you don't get to decide. But number two, why can't we just rejoice that someone in our game has been honored like this? And you can't argue of those four names, their contribution to our sport, right?
Yeah, there's no question that he's deserving of it. The only thing that I would raise about it is was he too young to get it? You know, he's certainly deserving of it. When I had a Hall of Fame vote, I never voted for anybody under the age of 50, which means that I didn't vote for Mickelson the year he got in. I didn't vote for Ernie Els or Vijay Singh the year they got in. I would have voted for them eventually, but the age thing is a thing for me. But there's absolutely no question that we should be celebrating the fact that Tiger received this award that only three other golfers have received.
Now, why would you have had that opinion? Because let's just say that the old Hall of Fame rules were still intact, Tiger Woods already would have been up for a vote. You mean to tell me with Tiger's record, you would have voted no on Hall of Fame just on the basis of his age?
Yeah. I don't get it. About why, when you know, and golfers remain competitive longer than anybody else, and the World Golf Hall of Fame has in fact now changed the rule to 50,
right?
Because I think they realized that it creates some awkward moments there, but when I got the PGA of America Lifetime Achievement Award, I thought I was too young for that. I was an old guy.
Well, weren't you the first one that was breathing at the time?
I didn't want to be told I was an old guy. I kept feeling like by giving me the award, they were telling me it was time to get off the stage, and I wasn't ready to do that.
You know, people's lack of civility towards Tiger getting this honor leads me to this, and I realize you work for the Golf Channel. Look, Brandel Chamblee is paid for his opinions, period. They are never made willy-nilly. He is as prepared and studied as anyone I've ever come across in this business. And every opinion that he gives is thought out and measured. I don't know if I've ever seen someone so vilified by players as he for giving an opinion. I mean, if you don't like it, that's fine. Is it because he doesn't have the gravitas that Johnny Miller has? And you know, because Johnny could be uber critical, and I rarely saw anybody go after Johnny like they go after Brandel.
Yeah, you know, I think that it probably has to do more with the fact that that Brandel is lived his entire media career in the social media era. You know, you wonder if early in Johnny Miller's career, if Twitter and other things had existed then, people would have come after him. But we do live in an age right now, and these social media platforms have created an environment in which if we disagree with somebody, we tell them not only that we disagree with them, but we tell them that they're an idiot. You know, and that's just like a sad place that we've devolved into. We should be able to say, okay, you've got your opinion about whether Tiger Woods is ever going to win again. I disagree with you on that, but I don't have to go calling you names. But we are living in a name calling era right now.
Yeah, and it's also crazy. You know, there's nothing wrong with having a differing opinion or disagreeing, but now it's almost like you said, you can't just disagree. You disagree and you're offended by that person's opinion.
You know, one of my favorite things that the late great Dan Jenkins once said to me, we were talking about the use of humor in his writing, and he said, "I never sacrifice the truth for a laugh," you know, and I think you could say the same thing about the stuff that Brandel has said. You know, he doesn't say stuff just to annoy people. He says stuff that he truly believes, and that he's got the facts to back up what he believes. And whether you agree with him or not, the fact is you got to respect the guy for A, putting in the work to understand what he's trying to say, and B, having the courage to say it. And being critical of Tiger Woods is not really a popular thing. There was a time about 5 years ago when a lot of people were willing to jump on that bandwagon, but that tide's turned now.
You know, I'm sure you'll identify with this and recognize it. I'm the son of a former newspaper man, and my father used to always tell me that the job of a columnist is to have an opinion and be able to back up that opinion with facts. Whether or not he even agreed with that opinion is irrelevant, but it was his job to have an opinion and to get it out there. And that's the way I feel about Chamblee and these other guys. They're essentially the new age columnist. It's their job to have an opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And you see it. I mean, you know, I'm a Boston Celtic fan. And after the first game of the Milwaukee series, when Paul Pierce, appearing on the network televising the game, came on and said, this series is over, the Celtics have won. I was thinking, uh-oh, boy, Paul, you've just stepped in it right there. And he turned out to be probably wrong on that now. But the fact is, that is his job, is to come out and say it. And then he came out and said why he thought that, why he thought they would win the series. And that is, it's a bold place to go to be a columnist. When I was writing columns for Golf World magazine, you know, you dreaded when the letters to the editors came in, you know, and I would always tell our editor, I said, you know, how come you don't write a letter about somebody who liked my column? You know, but the other thing is it's sexier to run the letters of the people who didn't like the column and are calling the writer an idiot.
Ron Cyrak with RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel is our guest taking Dead Aim. We were talking earlier about living in the social media age. I want to talk with you about someone who you and I are big fans of on a personal level and of her professionalism, and that's Lexi Thompson. I've never seen anyone work so hard to be everything that the LPGA wants in terms of social media engagement. She is fantastic at letting all of us behind the curtain. Apparently, she's been taking some heat from some trolls to the point that she's pulling back and pulling away from social media. Last year, she had to take some personal time off to just sort of get her head in life right. And now there's this. I would hate to see someone who is so vital to the game, especially the American game, walk away from it for reasons unrelated to actual play. I mean, this has really bothered me.
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to figure out why she has gotten hammered as badly as she's gotten hammered on social media, because she's handled everything that I've seen her handle enormously well. You know, she handled the four-stroke penalty at the ANA Inspiration.
She handled it better than you and I did the next week talking about it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, she handled it very, very graciously. And look, you look back on it, and one of the rules that was changed. And if that rule didn't exist at that time and she had gotten just a two-stroke penalty instead of a four-stroke penalty, she wins a tournament. And she handled that well. Now, eventually, I think that the whole mental stress of that did wear down on her, and that was part of the reason why she took a month off last year to try to regroup mentally and get her stuff back. But now, and the number of different things that she's criticized on, and again, this is the era in which we live in. If you play golf with a prominent person who is not very popular, or maybe somebody that people disagree with, then you get criticized for doing that. And you know, it's just like we all got to learn that everybody can't live their life the way we want to live our life. You know,
and you know this. She is such a kind and I hate to use this word to describe, but she's a sweet person and very engaging. I hate to see someone vilified like this.
Yeah, and you know, I think the other thing that's hard. I mean, you know, if I was an agent, I would probably be telling my players stay off of social media, don't read what they're saying about you. But we also live in an era where you can't do that because a lot of your endorsement partners want you to be active on social media and want you to be out there. So you still got to, even if you're going to say, hey, I'm not going to be on it, you're going to have people who are writing checks to you saying, hey, we want you to be on it because this is a really valuable marketing tool for us. But, you know, there's the amount of criticism that prominent people in every profession, but especially athletes, come under through social media, that's a hard pill to swallow.
Ron, the PGA Tour is a really hard life. Someone else who's pulling back this week. It's been announced that Chris Kirk is taking an indefinite leave of absence from the tour to deal with alcoholism. The life on tour, people who think it's just glamorous going spot to spot and playing really nice courses, whatever, it is a grind. And if things aren't going well, it can be awful. And eventually this game hates each and every person that plays it for a period of time. Are you as surprised as I am that we don't see more stories like this?
Yeah, you know, I think we are going to see more stories about it because I think it's become more legitimized to acknowledge the personal struggles and to deal with them. And people now are more not thought of as being weak for admitting that they have a problem, but now are viewed as being strong for having a problem. And, you know, look, I can tell you from writers that I know, life on the road is not an easy life, and there are temptations that are out there. There are few options to unwind, and the pressure to unwind quickly, particularly if you're an athlete, are enormous. And to be able to rein that all in and figure out how to get your demons under control. Any people much smarter than me and much more trained than me will tell you that. Alcoholism is never the problem. It's a symptom of a problem. And it's something that, and I think that Kirk has come to realize that, and he's going to try to figure out, he's acknowledged in the past that he has issues with alcohol. He's now going to try to figure out why does he have those issues with alcohol.
Ron Cyrak with RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim. All right. This is the big one. I'm trying to get a handle on last week's Wells Fargo Championship. On paper, this should have been a huge tournament and a huge week. 3 weeks out from the Masters, 2 weeks out from the PGA, on a course that has held a major championship, following a gimmick tournament in New Orleans. Am I wrong to wonder what happened? Why did so many top players stay away? Or am I just overreacting because I'm here in Charlotte and players are still trying to figure out their scheduling with the compacted major season this year?
No, I mean that's a tournament that players really, really love. They love the pro-am format down there. They love the golf course. They love everything about it. And I think what we're seeing right now, and it's going to take some while to settle into this, and maybe the PGA Tour is going to have to figure things out. But the way in which they've jiggered the schedule around, moving the PGA Championship into May and creating this situation where you've got major events in March, April, May, June, July, and August, and players are going to be adjusting their schedules around that, and they may have to move some other prominent events around. And believe me, the PGA Tour will never, ever, ever admit that there are levels of events, you know, that there are A-list, B-list, C-list events, but there are out there, and the players have to make decisions, and this may put the PGA Tour in a position where they got to think about some scheduling juggling to do down the road.
You're a Northeast guy. There's been concern since it was announced that the PGA was moving to May in terms of just agronomical problems in the Northeast with growing grass this time of year so early in the golf playing season. We've seen Bethpage Black play as a beast for the U.S. Open. We've seen it much easier for a PGA Tour playoff event. What sort of Bethpage Black can we expect to see for the PGA next week?
It's going to be fascinating because I can tell you, living in the Northeast, and I'm on Cape Cod, and I'm essentially right across the water from Long Island, where it is, and our golf courses are in tough shape here. We've had a really, really wet, cold spring, and I think the same's been going on down there. They're going to get, I'm sure that they'll get the greens in shape for it, but I think the course is going to play. I think a long golf course is going to play even longer. I was there for both U.S. Opens at Bethpage, and the one in 2009, no round ended on the day that it began because it rained every day, and it ended up with a Monday finish, and that was being played in the middle of June. Being played in the middle of May, I think is going to create some interesting issues down there. Now, all that said, they will have every superintendent and agronomist and every smart person who knows anything about golf is going to be on site that week, and they'll be there to do everything they can to make the golf course as good as they can. And it's I'm always astounded when I'm at a tournament challenged by weather at the incredible job that these people do to get the golf course ready to play. But it is going to be an interesting test for the new date for the PGA Championship to have the first one being played, the first one played in May to be played in the Northeast is going to create some interesting challenges.
Down the line, does the PGA have to take into account, okay, look, as much as we would love to be at some of the storied Northeast venues, we're in May, we're just going to be rolling the dice too much. Does this bring back into play, you know, some Southwest locations that normally they could not play because of heat in the summer? Or could we see some venues that we haven't seen in decades, or perhaps some new venues?
Yeah, I think so. I think it does bring places like Texas and Florida back into the mix, you know. And it's been a long time since there've been majors at in either of those places. And it is going to, you know, you have to think, boy, what does this mean for what does the middle of May mean for the upper Midwest? What's it mean for the Northeast? But it is going to open up other parts of the country that I think that they would like to get golf tournaments to. Because they can be, they can go to places now that the U.S. Open can't go to because of that 1 month difference in date.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Cyrak with RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim. You will be spending next week at the U.S. Women's Senior Open down here in Pine Needles. I had the great fortune last week to spend some time with one of these people, Ron, that you come across, and they don't just live up to expectation. They exceed expectation. They have sort of a light around them, and that is Nancy Lopez. After I got done talking with her, all I could think is, you know, maybe Bob Jones, maybe Arnold Palmer, maybe Seve Ballesteros, Sayre Park. She's in that league as far as importance to the game, is she not?
Oh, I'd put her in there with Arnold Palmer and Seve, as I think those are the three people who have had the greatest impact on the game, and I still think that there has been no one in the women's game who's moved the needle as much as Nancy did, and it had to do with she had that combination of personality and performance. You know, she was not only a really engaging person to talk to and a great, great representative of the tour out there. She went out and she won. And to in her rookie year to win seven times, five in a row, was you know, as dramatic of a run as the women's game has ever had. And, you know, the other thing that I'll say about her, she's on a very, very short list, and I can only think of three who are on this list, of women who won major championships after having become a mom. And, you know, she had three girls, and you think back sometime about, boy, how many tournaments and how many majors would she have won, you know, if she hadn't taken her time off to become a mom, but she did. And Nancy, Julie Inkster, and Katrina Matthews are the only moms I can think of who won majors after having been a mom. But no one is as engaging as Nancy.
From RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, that's the great Ron Cyrak. And when we return back to campus, we go this time to Chapel Hill as head men's golf coach Andrew DiVitetto takes dead aim at his Tar Heels and their season so far as they get ready for the upcoming Stanford Regional, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We're taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Andrew DiVitetto is in his second year as head men's golf coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, and we caught up earlier this week as he prepared to take his team out west for the Stanford Regional. As we're recording this, yesterday we were going to, and yesterday being Wednesday, I guess, we were going to talk, but you were doing some caddying for one of your players for a U.S. Open qualifier. We're not going to mention the player, but things did not go as well as you would have liked them to and as well as the player would have liked them to. And I was struck by something you and I have talked about many times, and that is the intimate relationship between a college coach and his players. At this point, once they're with you, they are your kids. And when we were swapping messages back and forth, you said, look, wasn't a good day. We're on the range right now. And I just thought about, as a father with my son on the range, following those disappointing rounds, just trying to work it out and work through the emotions. Just talk about that relationship a little bit and talk about, you know, how's the kid doing today?
Yeah, well, I don't know. As you say that, I kind of get chilled because, you know, as you mentioned, you know the relationships that we have with our guys. You know, we get pretty deep into their lives. I know everybody's got different beliefs and different philosophies and all that, and you know, some coaches stay out of certain areas. Well, we go wherever our guys allow us to go. You know, so if you know, there's some guys where we know their friends, we know their girlfriends, we obviously know their families. You know, but we pretty much know everything going on in their lives. You know, we think at all times, but sometimes you don't know everything. So yesterday was, in my opinion, more about just being around someone and hoping that they just kind of enjoy life a little bit. It's been a little bit stressful, just facing up final exams, the academic semester coming to a close. You know, the stress of that, the stress of performing on the golf course. You know, being a student athlete is amazing, but you do have to make sacrifices, and there's things that you have to give up in life, and then there's just a lot of expectations. And you know, some people handle that wonderfully, and sometimes people need help, and sometimes it's a roller coaster ride. So we just do everything we can to help guys, you know, manage all that is on their plate.
Well, and you know this as well as I do, and maybe you have to be a little bit older to really understand this. At some point in every golfer's life, this game is going to hate you for a few days. You're going to have days where this game just hates you, and it does evil things to you, and you just have to let those days go, right?
Yeah. You just have to find some, you know, perspective, and just because you have a bad day or even a bad shot, a bad hole, you know, the world is not coming to an end. Your teammates don't hate you. Your coaches don't hate you. Your parents don't hate you. You know, and when you're as competitive as some of our guys are and you invest so much, sometimes it feels that way. You know, so we just try to kind of bring them back to center and let them know that the sun is going to come up the next day.
I was just trying to imagine, you know, here was a Division I coach caddying for one of his kids, and I was just saying to myself, can you ever see Nick Saban picking up the bag for, like, his starting right tackle? No, there's no way that's happening.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty unique, like I said, unique relationship that we have with our guys. And, you know, we just had kind of our final family dinner, team dinner, senior dinner the other night. And it's kind of the stuff that we talk about is we do get very close with our guys and we just enjoy being around them. It's, obviously, we make sacrifices because myself and Coach Clark, we have wives at home. We have kids at home. I have a one-year-old, three-year-old. He has a four-year-old and six-year-old, so there's a lot of things that we miss. But in terms of the team, we really, truly do enjoy being with those guys and laughing with them and celebrating the highs and celebrating the lows.
Coach Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. We talked right after the fall, but just to review, you were replacing three of the greatest players in the history of the Tar Heel program. And one of the things that was great about your fall was that you got contributions from just about everyone, from veteran players to rookies like Doogie Urgood. You had to be feeling really well going into the break, and then you came out of the break solid as a rock, Coach.
Yeah, honestly, we're pretty pleased with the spring semester. We got off to a very average start, I guess, very early in February down at Seabest. At TPC Sawgrass, but after that, I thought we did a lot of really nice things. And the cool part was, for as well as we were playing, we still felt like we weren't really firing on all cylinders and that we could still get better. But I think kind of early February-ish, I think we were somewhere around like 35, 36 in the rankings. And then, you know, after like a 6-7 week period, I think we had launched kind of up to like 21, 22, somewhere around there. But we just—it was just cool because we really got into player development. You know, there was improvement kind of across the board. Two guys to really highlight: Austin Hitt and Ryan Gerard. You know, those are two guys that were obviously back from last year, and both of them have made significant strides. Ryan Gerard, you know, much better this year. He's always super, super competitive, and that's what we love about him. But he's been, you know, more consistent this year. Kind of stepping into a leadership role. And then you have Austin Hitt, who I recently kind of singled him out in a team meeting just because he's been incredible. Just the transformation that he's made, not just from a golf standpoint, but even him, you know, life as a human being, as a person. It's really hard for anyone, but especially young men, to kind of look at themselves and say, I'm not very good at this, or I need to be better in these areas, and then to actually go to work in those areas. And Austin has done that. He's committed himself to that. And, I mean, his stroke average is significantly lower. He's on pace. You know, we're golfers. We're weird. We don't really talk about it too much. But he's on pace to currently break the UNC single-season scoring average record. And he's currently ranked 38th in the country, which – you know, Ben Griffin wouldn't like to hear this, but I'm pretty sure that's a better ranking than even Ben Griffin ever had.
I had also made notes about Gerard and Austin, and you talk about them making significant strides. What is it that clicks, or what is it that did click? Is it what you described, the moment where you're able to look in the mirror, you become mature enough where you're able to look in the mirror and say, you know what? I could keep doing this the way I'm going, and I'm going to be like just treading water, but I need to improve doing X and to make yourself to actually discipline yourself to make those improvements. Is that what clicks? Is that how these guys have made those strides?
Yeah, you have to step outside your little box. You know, everybody has a comfort zone, a comfort box, whatever it is. We like to stay there, but we don't grow as golfers. We don't grow as people until we get outside of our comfort zone and outside of our little box, right? So Ryan Gerard, he has phenomenal touch around the greens. I mean, phenomenal touch around the greens. He controls his ball really well, the flight and distance. One thing that's a strength for him is also somewhat what holds him back, and that's, you know, just his mindset. He is so competitive, like just intense, fiery competitor, which you want in all of your players. You know, but there's sometimes where that actually holds him back because that intensity it just becomes a little bit too much. And whether he can't manage it for 18 holes or for 36 holes, like whatever it is, there's, you know, kind of lapses in there. So Coach Clark, give him a lot of credit because he's walked quite a bit with Ryan, and they've just kind of really focused on mindset and attitude and being, you know, maybe like using, still being that fiery competitive guy, but, you know, maybe just keeping it, you know, a little bit more even keeled so he has more energy later in the round. It's a little bit more of a consistent mindset. You take some of the highs and some of the lows out and just go about your business and let your game really do the work and speak for itself because his game is phenomenal. You know, and then for Austin, it's become a full commitment to making yourself better. If you would have asked me 2 years ago, you know, will Austin Hitt be a leader on the team? I can honestly say, you know, no, we didn't really see that. And he's just stepped into that role. I mean, 100% has stepped into that role. He helps our guys in so many different ways. And then when you think about just him, he has fully dedicated himself to becoming a better player. And I think he has a chance to play this game for a really long time because of the way that he's been going about his business.
Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach in the North Carolina Tar Heels. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Talk to me about the competition and the camaraderie on your team. Golfers can go about practice and qualifying one of two different ways, especially practice. They can either, you know, take it as individual practice and really just go inside themselves, or if you got a bunch of alpha males out there, it can become really, really competitive and really pushing each other around the golf course. How would you describe your team?
Yeah, well, you know me, I love competition. So we compete in a lot of different ways, and really we compete every single day. You know, whether it's just a round of qualifying, whether it's a short game contest, whether it's a putting drill, we do whatever we can to kind of recreate or create pressure. So I think that's one of the hardest things to do in our sport. You know, everybody, for the most part, can hit a 7-iron straight on the range. You can hit a driver straight on the range. Well, you know, it's a whole lot different when it's, you know, the final round of an ACC championship and there's water left, you know, off the tee and it's, you know, whatever, bunkers to the right or out of bounds right. I mean, that's kind of what makes the difference there. So we do whatever we can to create competitive situations and just hopefully put the guys under some pressure here at home so that when it, you know, when we're on the road, it becomes a little bit more natural to them.
Go back to your season a little bit. In the spring, you finished the sixth at Pontevedra. I didn't think that was as bad as you thought it was. Then you go fourth in Hawaii, fourth in San Diego, win your invitational, then a second and a fifth. You were really, really in a good place. You said you got as high as the early 20s. Think you're ranked 27th or something now, which leads to this. What happened at conference? That finish was not what you could have envisioned or expected going in, right?
Yeah, and I take that one, absolutely. Everything that you just mentioned, we did start playing well, and all that, but what the tournaments you just mentioned, right? So we went to Florida, then we went to Hawaii, then we went to California, then we went to Florida, then we were at home. We actually threw in a team retreat down in South Carolina. We flew out to Phoenix, and then we came to ACCs. And, you know, me being relatively new, kind of sitting in this chair, I think I overscheduled. And I think we got to a point where the guys were worn out. It goes back to, you know, what we talked about being at a place like the University of North Carolina where academics are a priority and academics can be stressful. So all of that, especially coming down the stretch when we went Florida, Phoenix, ACCs, all of that is leading up to final exams where these guys get a lot of stuff thrown on their plate and they just really never got a break. So it's like, I think everybody kind of needed a mental break, a legitimate physical break. We needed a couple of days to sleep. You know, I'm not making excuses for our guys, but the night before the first round, well, really it turned into 36 holes at ACCs. Yeah, we had one guy that was up until 12:30 in the morning writing a paper. We all had to be up at 5 a.m. We had another guy that woke up at like 4 a.m. to finish writing the paper. So really it was just that first round. We got off to an absolutely horrible, horrible start. And as you know, our conference is so deep, it's so talented. You know, if you throw yourself that far behind, it's really hard to kind of make up ground. So a blip on the radar, we're over it, we're beyond it. We've talked about it. I think it's a great learning experience for all of us. For me, right, we'll schedule different next year. I think it'll be a great learning curve for our guys, especially some of the younger ones. You know, it teaches them about time management. It teaches them about discipline. You know, did you really have to be up until 12:30 in the morning writing that paper? Could you have used your time a little bit better, you know, for the 3 or 4 days leading up to it? Same thing with the guy that was up at 4 in the morning. You know, all the decisions that led up to that, were they the right ones? Maybe they were, maybe they weren't, but either way, it's a learning experience for us. So we're, you obviously, you don't want that result. It happened. We learn from it. We move on. And all of our attention is on regionals.
I was going to say, good news is, get you out of here with this, too. Good news is, the big goal is still in play, and that's to get to Fayetteville and the NCAAs. To get there, though, we have to finish top six at regionals. You, along with State, heading out to Palo Alto for the Stanford Regional. In fact, as we're talking now, you're getting ready to leave and getting out there a little early, aren't you?
Yeah. Just being a West Coast trip, I think most teams will fly out Friday, so we fly out tomorrow at 7 a.m., when the selection show took place, we were texting with Van and Press over at NC State, joking around saying, you know, hey, who wants to charter the plane? We'll go together. So we are going together. I just think it's, you know, an American flight or an Alaskan flight or something tomorrow morning out of RDU. You know, no bells and whistles there. But, yeah, we'll get out there. We land, like, pretty much lunchtime, West Coast time tomorrow. Gives us that entire afternoon to kind of get settled. Get adjusted to the time change, and then you got all day Saturday to hang out, practice, play, still continue to adjust, and then be ready for the practice run on Sunday.
That's Andrew DiBattista, head men's golf coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. I'd also like to thank Press McFall, the head man of the NC State Wolfpack, for joining us this week, and wish them both luck out at the Stanford Regional. Also, my thanks to Ron Cyrak of RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel for his time and insight. A reminder, great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Also, our terrestrial radio times. Remember, they have changed on Fox Sports Radio Charlotte, 94.7 FM and 1660 AM. You can now hear us twice a weekend, Saturday mornings from 7 to 8, Sundays from 11 to noon. Weather-wise, well, it could get dodgy at best in the Carolinas this weekend. But hey, Sunday is Mother's Day. And even if she never fired a shot with you, chances are, Mom has rooted and lived and died by every shot you've ever taken on the golf course. And for that, you can take a day away and dedicate it to her. And for those whose mothers are no longer with us in physicality, you know they are there in spirit. You feel them every day. However, if you do find a way to somehow tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart, if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.